Chapter 28, The Kingdoms of Spain and Portugal. Ferdinand and Isabella unite Spain. Now let's leave England and travel back over into Europe. Go across the English Channel, the water on England's southern side. You'll find yourself in France, the country that fought with England in the Hundred Years' War. Now go southwest, and you'll cross over into another powerful country, Spain. We've already read about the reconquest of Spain, when the Christian kingdoms of Spain conquered the land that had been ruled by Muslims for hundreds of years. The reconquest was carried out by small, divided Christian kingdoms all over Spain. But as time went on, these small kingdoms joined together. Two large and powerful kingdoms called Aragon and Castile grew to cover most of Spain. A third smaller kingdom, Portugal, lay on the western coast of Spain. The king of Castile, Enrique, was a young man with big ambitions. He wanted to make Castile into the greatest kingdom of Spain. But to do this, he needed more soldiers for his army. So he promised one of his noblemen, a famous fighter named Pedro Giron, his sister Isabella in marriage, in exchange for plenty of soldiers who would make Enrique's army stronger. Pedro Giron was delighted by this offer. He would become the king's brother-in-law by marrying the Castilian princess. But Isabella was horrified. She was only 13 years old. Pedro Giron was over 40, and he was a scoundrel with a reputation for drinking, quarreling, and killing. She begged her brother to call off the marriage, but he refused. A great wedding feast was planned. Soon the castle was full of cooking, sewing, and baking. But Isabella went weeping in her room, praying that something would prevent this horrible marriage. Pedro Giron set out for his wedding in a fine mood, boasting about his great match. But on the journey, he began to feel sick. Before he could reach Isabella's castle, he died of stomach pains. Isabella was filled with joy and relief. But her relief didn't last long. 4 years later, her brother decided that she should marry the King of Portugal, so that Portugal and Castile could be united into one stronger kingdom. The King of Portugal was a fat, wheezing man old enough to be Isabella's father. Once again, Isabella begged her brother to change his mind, but once again he refused. "You'll marry the King of Portugal whether you like it or not," he told her. So Isabella sent a secret message to Ferdinand, the young prince of the Kingdom of Aragon. She had never met Ferdinand, but he was just her own age, and she had heard that he was handsome, courteous, and gentlemanlike. "My brother is determined to make a great match for me," she wrote to him. "I won't marry the King of Portugal, but you are as good a match as that old man. Meet me at a secret place in Castile and decide whether you will marry me instead." Ferdinand agreed, but he didn't want Enrique to know that he was coming to Castile. So he collected six of his knights together and told them to dress up like merchants in a trading caravan. Ferdinand put on rags and pretended to be their servant and donkey tender. Meanwhile, Isabella crept out of her room in the middle of the night, stole a horse from her brother's stables, and galloped away on horseback. When the two met at the secret rendezvous, they talked for 2 hours and decided to get married right away. 4 days later, they were husband and wife. Isabella's brother Enrique was furious. But when he died 6 years later, Isabella became the Queen of Castile. And when Ferdinand inherited the throne of Aragon, Isabella and Ferdinand combined their two kingdoms together into one large kingdom of Spain. Ferdinand and Isabella decided that they would finish the job of unifying Spain by conquering the very last bit of Spain still under Muslim rule. This last Muslim stronghold was a small mountainous southern kingdom named Granada, where a Muslim king ruled over his subjects from a castle called Alhambra. For 10 years, Ferdinand and Isabella battered away at Granada. Ferdinand himself led the army into battle. Isabella traveled all around Castile on horseback, begging the men of Spain to join the army and fight. Finally, the Spanish armies were victorious. The Muslim king of Granada surrendered the castle of Alhambra and fled. According to legend, he turned around and as he trudged out of Granada, sighed over the last view of his lost kingdom. But his mother, who was walking along behind him, and who was very angry over losing her home, snapped, "Don't weep like a woman over what you couldn't defend like a man." The place where the king stopped to sigh is still called the Last Sigh of the Moor. Now that Granada was theirs, Ferdinand and Isabella declared all of Spain to be a Christian kingdom, and they made it illegal to practice any other religion in Spain. The Jews who lived in Spain were forced to leave, and almost every Spanish village had Jewish families in it. They sold their homes, often for mere pennies, and set out from Spain in overcrowded ships. Many died in the long, dangerous journey out of Spain. Although Ferdinand and Isabella were good rulers, they are also remembered for this unjust act. They brought all of Spain together into one country, but they also forced the Jews in Spain to leave their homes forever. Henry the Navigator, Prince of Portugal. Ferdinand and Isabella drew Castile, Aragon, and Granada together into one Spanish kingdom. But Portugal, the kingdom on Spain's western coast, kept its independence from the rest of Spain. Portugal was a small kingdom, not much wider than the state of Florida. It had a long coast with many beaches and harbors. Wild cats and wild pigs roamed the countryside. Eagles and falcons soared overhead. Flamingos stood in the marshes at the water's edge. The Portuguese were known for their grapes, their olives, and their tripe. Tripe was a medieval dish made of the lining of cow's stomachs, cooked together with calf's feet, onions, cow fat, and fermented apple cider. The Portuguese thought tripe was one of the greatest delicacies in the world. Because Portugal had such a long coastline, it was easy for the Portuguese people to build boats and sail them. One prince of Portugal, Henry, wanted to use these boats for more than short trips. He wanted the Portuguese to learn how to sail farther than anyone else in the world. Prince Henry was the fourth son of the King of Portugal. That meant that he would never inherit the throne, so he didn't need to worry about learning to rule Portugal. He could use his money and his time in another way, to make the Portuguese into great sailors and explorers. Because of his love of the sea, Prince Henry became known as Henry the Navigator. Henry first began to think about building a fleet of seagoing ships when he was a young man helping his brothers fight in North Africa. Henry's father had sent them down to North Africa to capture an important Muslim trading city. Merchants from Africa came to this city with ivory, gold, silver, and salt. Merchants from India came with spices, pepper, cloves, and nutmeg. In the Middle Ages, there were no refrigerators, so people put a lot of spices in their meat. That way they could eat the meat even when it started to spoil. The spices covered up any bad tastes. Spices were so important that pepper was almost worth its weight in gold. But Muslim traders knew that the Portuguese were Christians who had driven the Muslims out of their country. And as soon as the Portuguese took control of the city, Muslim traders began to avoid it. Henry realized that if the Portuguese wanted gold and ivory from West Africa, they would do better to sail down the African coast and trade with the West African tribes face to face. So he hired shipbuilders to build new ships that were fast and light, perfect for exploring strange waters. He paid mapmakers to draw new maps of the coastlines so that sailors would know exactly where they were when they came ashore. And he built a school for navigation. Navigating, following a map to a certain destination, is hard to do at sea because there aren't any roads, trees, or landmarks. So Henry's sailors had to learn how to read star maps so that they could find the North Star and other important stars at different times during the year. They had to learn to use an astrolabe, a special measuring tool, to measure how far the sun or the North Star lay above the horizon, and then they had to be able to calculate a ship's position from this information. They had to know how to use a compass, an instrument with a magnetic needle that always pointed north, and they had to be able to calculate a ship's speed. In the Middle Ages, sailors measured how fast a ship was moving by tying knots at regular intervals on a long rope. Then they would put a piece of wood weighted with metal on one end of the rope and wind the other end up onto a reel. As the ship sailed, the sailors would toss the wooden float off the back of the ship and turn over a glass, which had just enough sand in it to run out in exactly 1 minute. They would let the rope unwind while the sand trickled out of the glass. Then they would stop the reel and count the number of knots along the length of rope that had unwound. This would tell them the speed of the ship. Today, a boat is still said to be traveling at so many knots. Once Henry's sailors learned how to navigate through unfamiliar waters, they were ready to head south to Africa. But they were frightened. No one had ever sailed down the coast of Africa before. They called the mysterious waters that lay down south the Sea of Darkness. They were sure that sea monsters and whirlpools lay in this Sea of Darkness. They were afraid that the ocean became so shallow that ships would wreck on the sea's bottom. They were certain that strong currents would pull them off into nowhere so that they could never return. And they thought that the sun down south was so hot that the sea water boiled and roasted men alive. Henry tried to convince his men to sail further south. He paid for expedition after expedition, but all of his sailors were too frightened to go very far. Finally, after 14 expeditions, a brave explorer named Gil Enes dared to venture down into the Sea of Darkness, and he discovered that the water there was the same as the water closer to home. Slowly, the Portuguese began to follow the example set by Gil Enes. They sailed further and further down the coast of West Africa to trade for ivory, salt, gold, jewels, ostrich eggs, sealskins, and slaves. But although Henry the Navigator had hoped that his ships would find their way to India, he died before this could happen. You see, maps in the Middle Ages didn't show how huge Africa was. No one had ever sailed all the way around the continent, so mapmakers couldn't draw an accurate picture of Africa. And no one knew exactly how far they would have to sail to get around the tip of Africa. Some sailors thought that Africa might stretch all the way down to the bottom of the world.